Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Here it is, buddy. Here it is, Friday.
Good morning, Mully.
Good morning, David. Yes. We are inching ever closer.
One day closer.
One day more. One more day. We're getting closer and closer to the NFC North showdown. The Packers losing last night just throws a little more weight on what is already a very, very important showdown, conference deciding, and I didn't say division.
You have to wait all day Sunday for it, too. The anticipation will build even more. You know what happened last night, though? It added to the significance of this weekend because you sense change in the air in the division because what happened with the Packers doesn't typically happen with the Packers. Let's just say the Mike McCarthy era, the Mike Holmgren era. I mean, this is not
Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, the Aaron Rodgers era. You don't typically see them blow games the way they've blown games this year. And now the way they lost that game last night against the Seahawks and the way the Bears are on the rise, Sunday night has a feel, a very changing of the guard feel to it, potentially, if you're the Bears. You have an opportunity here to beat the Vikings, assume first place, maintain first place in the division, and kind of make a statement that, all right, you know, this is the way it's going to be for a while. You get that feeling that that's possible after watching the Packers sort of make their own statement about, okay, we are not what we used to be. We're going to lose games we should win.
It's really a significant. I think there's a couple of things going on here, and I know that Mike McCarthy's on the way out, and I know that he's going to ultimately take the blame for that, for the failures of this team and whatever is going on. But I don't think that's the root of their problem. I think they have not put together a team around the quarterback. I think they have a lot. I think we really saw it when Rodgers went down a year ago, and we saw how bad that team was without him. And then it was, I think we always suspected that the quarterback was covering for a lot of problems. But when you saw that actually come to fruition and you saw how bad they were, so they tried to change the defensive coordinator. That was a big conversation up there for a long time. But what you have there is a team that's on the decline, that has been on the decline for a while. But a lot of those problems were erased by the performance of the quarterback.
And he is capable of still doing that, but he can't do everything. And he isn't, you know, the magician he used to be. I shouldn't say that. He's
pretty good.
He's pretty good.
Yeah.
I guess he doesn't have the supporting cast that he used to have.
No.
And certainly when you have done as poor of a job of maintaining sort of the roster as they have done in the last couple of years, you're going to have a sense of regret in Green Bay that you've wasted years of his prime.
They don't spend a lot of money in free agency because part of it is they can't get players to go there. Would you want to go there if you were a player? Can you think of better places to play with your career?
I know that's
Reggie
always
White's not
always
walking through the door. Buddy.
That's always the question, and they have historically have had issues. Charles Woodson. You know, didn't he go there as a free agent? That wasn't a trade. I mean, there are opportunities there for players if they want to value other things other than, you know, your big city, big market, diversity, all those things. But those don't exist necessarily in the Green Bay market, but they do historically win. And so if you want to win, if you want to be part of that organization, which is a first-class organization, then yeah. But you're right. They haven't done a nice job of supplementing Aaron Rodgers with weaponry.
But McCarthy's getting kicked out the door because of that. The way it works is people in town see all the flaws and see all the problems and can't wait to get rid of a guy. And people outside are like, that guy won a Super Bowl. That team's pretty good. they haven't brought in enough talent, and it's just the vision you have from a distance versus up close. And I think his time, you know, how long has Mike been there? It's been a long ass time. And it's hard to keep stuff like that
13 years. And what you just said is why he'll be out of work for a day and a half.
Yeah.
Somebody will look at him and say, change of scenery, good track record, Super Bowl ring. Let's see how he plays with our fan base. Because we've seen it before. Whether it was John Fox in Denver. Mm-hmm. There are all sorts of examples of guys who get second chances and sometimes third chances. Lovie Smith in Tampa Bay. Those are probably two of the worst examples I could have come up with.
Well, it's just you say that, and I'm like, no one wants to hire that. What are you talking about?
Bill Belichick in New England. All right, let's go there.
But
I think Mike McCarthy, his days are numbered in Green Bay, but I don't think his days are numbered as an NFL head coach.
The Bears have announced plans and a new logo for their 100-year celebration. The fan convention is going to be at the Rosemont Convention Center June 7th through the 9th, and they got a new classic jersey in the works. And
what elementary school did they use for the contest to determine the logo?
Wow, that was a real shot. That's unbelievable. You know, here's the problem: you can make jokes, but do you have any idea how much this means to George and the McCaskies? This is their legacy.
The logo aside, I have full respect for what they're trying to do and what they're doing.
But 100 years of the Bears, huh? It seems like the last 3 years were 100 years of the Bears. The John Fox era felt like 100 years of the Bears.
They could have celebrated that midway through his first season because it felt like it was like two and a half years.
But it's cool because they should be awful good next year. They got this team and they got the whole group back.
Well, it's what we just described. I mean, if we're talking about a true changing of the guard, the Bears are going to enter the 2019 season as potential front runners in the division, and they're going to spend a year of celebrating a legacy, a history, a tradition that they're going to be able to uphold. It's going to be a lot more fun to do that when you're looking at a 12-4 potential record than if you're 4-12.
This Sunday night game is really an important one, but this season has been the Bears coming out of hibernation because they have been awful. It's been awful, and it's so different just this year. Just having Matt Nagy in here, keeping Vic Fangio, keeping that defense together, and watching a team that...
Now, that would have been a logo.
...is a really complete football team, and there are not a lot of them. You know, one of them might be the Vikings. That's a pretty complete team, but I don't know. I don't know that the Bears coaching innovators, can I call them that? Because Matt Nagy is coaching copycat, which is a really good thing. I don't mean it as a negative
thing. He's an innovator.
But it's innovative.
Sean McVay is a coaching copycat.
It's very innovative
here.
All
the good coaches are coaching copycats.
Play collector.
Yeah.
You know, that's what Mike Zimmer was kind of saying with the 800
plays. Yeah.
He is. That's what they do. But also, Vic Fangio is a creative play guy. He, in his own right, runs an awfully good
ship. He's even acknowledged
that.
Midway through his career, before he got to the Bears, even in his first season, he's known as the guy with the whole exotic blitz package and coming at you with intricate defenses and complex schemes. He hasn't had to do that this year.
No.
Because he's been able to get to the quarterback with four guys, and you don't always have to be that guy.
Sees it all. Yeah, that's a veteran coach that has been through it, watched the game evolve, and has seen it all. There's an element of kind of Belichick to him. Not Belichick. Belichick's unbelievable gift is being able, he would technically be a defensive guy, but you can't put him in that box. He is an overall coach.
No, you're right.
Vic is a defensive guy.
But what you said about Nagy applies to Vic Fangio, and that's not as an insult. You talk about collecting plays offensively, collecting schemes and defenses and approaches. These guys talk.
No
question. These guys borrow. It's harder sometimes to detect because the typical fan doesn't look at a defensive alignment and a defensive blitz scheme or package or a stunt and say, oh, you know, I've seen that before. That looks like the Cleveland Browns in 19-whatever. That looks like the Patriots in 2010. Whereas – offensively, it's much more easier to identify. But Vic Fangio has done everything that Matt Nagy has done to his offensive playbook with his defensive scheme.
It's a lot in the NFL. It is a copycat league.
And it is a lot of fun because when we're sitting around here in August and we're talking about our Super Bowl picks before the season, or maybe that was around Labor Day.
Yeah.
Vikings were mine.
Wow.
Because of their talent, because of Kirk Cousins. The Vikings were just
All they were missing was the quarterback.
All they were missing was the quarterback. And look, they brought in the quarterback. And that's how dangerous this team is. Their offensive line is not what it needs to be that Super Bowl contender yet.
Would you change that? The offensive line is a problem.
I would because of that.
It's garbage. Would you change that pick? Because my pick, I don't know if you remember my pick.
I do. It's the Saints.
I don't know that I might have to change that pick because Brandon Marshall's now on the Saints.
The only reason I'm not sure how
they're not going to make the playoffs. But he'll find a way to ruin them.
You know,
can you imagine?
I can't argue with that.
A guy that good. And I know he's got his issues, but he's never been to the playoffs.
That's one of the more remarkable statistics or oddities.
And he's played
in the NFL.
Like it's not like you know
he's played a long time.
And he's played for Denver,
some decent teams.
And he's played
Broncos, Bears, Jets, Giants.
A couple of those teams
Dolphins.
Are real good.
Wow, this is
it's like I'm worried for my pick. I can't believe.
I think they're going to be okay.
I hope so, but I don't know.
I would feel better about picking the Saints right now than the Vikings.
I don't know. The Brandon Marshall thing is a bridge too far for me. We're gonna get to the 5 at 5 next. We'll talk about all this stuff. Some great things to go over as we talk about this huge game coming up on Sunday night. Can't get here fast enough, but also you got to love some anticipation. It's Mully and Hall on the Score.
Based on Matt Nagy's reaction to Thursday's questions about Cody Parkey, do you think he's losing patience with the Chicago media's focus on the story or with Parkey?
I love this question. I said that this morning. Congratulations. He is definitely losing patience. This is not a story that is good for a head coach because, number one, you got a huge division game and you're sitting here talking about the kicker and him kicking at night. Number two, nobody wants to talk about the kicker. You want the kicker to just go out there and make his kicks. So you don't want any kind of confidence, any more shaken confidence than you already have. It is a bad story on 1,000 different levels. I would imagine there's a little bit of both. I think Matt Nagy probably didn't understand why in the hell did people care about the kicker. And I think there's also, you know, this is the mad scientist trying to get into the laboratory and get his beakers full of plays and pour them into each other and have some explosive reaction. Yes, he's losing patience with the Chicago media's focus on the story. And yes, he has to be losing patience with Cody Parkey. I don't think there's a good element to this story for a guy like Matt Nagy. I think he's a guy that wants to find the positive, wants to build things, wants to stay with people. And I think he's in a bit of a corner with this one because there's no solution. He doesn't know what to do. He's frustrated by it, and he keeps being asked about it.
I'd say a
lot of both, David.
This is almost his welcome to Chicago, you're not in Kansas City anymore moment, Matt Nagy, because I doubt that they're chasing kickers to practice over with choppers in Kansas City.
Do they have a chopper?
Do they have a chopper? I don't know. You know, and there's an element of you know, exaggeration, hyperbole. We get carried away. Yeah, but that's what happens when the Bears are good and relevant. And, you know, we like to say embrace it. As a head coach, you want to forget it. You want your kicker to not think about every step that he makes and every kick that he takes and all those things that sound like the police. So he's a little bit miffed. And he sounded a little bit, his body language, if you watch the press conference, it kind of screamed like, I would rather be anywhere else and talking about anything else except for this, because the longer this goes on, the more it gets in his head. And, you know, kickers are kickers.
Yes.
It's like a goalie. It's like it's one of the more enigmatic positions in all of sports. And you know that the more focus that's on this, and it's been all week, and nobody's talking about how, you know, the mirror images of both teams or the pass rushes of both teams or the quarterback matches. They're talking about the kicker and thinking about the kicker, and everybody's going to be talking about it up to Sunday night. So I think he's and also reflects that he is running out of patience with the kicker. So I think it's definitely both.
I think you just gave somebody an idea for a parody song there. You might want to get in on the ground floor, get your royalties all all correct before somebody runs away with that.
Wrong show, Kevin.
Yeah, thank God. You know, I didn't really like Matt Nagy yesterday. He came off as a little standoffish, a little, you know, peeved, which I can understand. You know, you don't have to go in there and be Johnny Sunshine all the time. You can be a little peeved if you want. But I think that it is kind of a welcome to Chicago, this isn't Kansas City moment. You know, the media here in Chicago could be a little bit more, you know, they'll keep you under a little bit more scrutiny, so to speak. And obviously this story with the helicopter thing and him missing all those kicks on Sunday, I think it kind of really escalated more than I ever expected it to. We're still talking about Cody Parkey. The very first thing we're talking about here on a Friday before the biggest game of the season is the kicker. So I understand how he could be a little bit annoyed, but I think he could have handled it a little bit better. I do think he was a tad rude yesterday, which you haven't seen from him, which I do think adds to the argument that maybe he is kind of sick of hearing about this. But it wasn't just one bad game from Cody Parkey. I think that's what some people are forgetting here. He's been pretty inconsistent all season long. He's already missed five kicks in just nine games, and that's not a great percentage. You know, that doesn't even include the extra points that he's shanked as well. So, you know, the story is ridiculous. It's gotten out of control. Hopefully for everybody, this guy can just hit a few kicks on Sunday night and we can move on and talk about, you know, the other 50 players on the roster. The actual football players on the roster.
The coach?
It seemed like it. It seemed like he was a little much yesterday for him.
Yeah, as Kevin said, we haven't seen Matt Nagy really irritated. So, you know, sure, he can have his day. And yes, he's definitely annoyed with the media's focus on Cody Parkey. And as you guys have all alluded to, the coach does not want to be talking about the kicker. The kicker should be doing his job, and it should not be an issue that is spoken about during the week, especially heading into a big, big primetime division game. So he's over the questions from the media, absolutely. I think he's given Cody Parkey this lifeline here. He's been very supportive with the rhetoric we've heard from him in terms of his belief in Cody Parkey. So I think he's a little frustrated and with Cody Parkey, of course, but I think the fact that you've seen him go to Soldier Field and do all the things that you would want a struggling kicker to do heading into the next week, I think he's not completely frustrated with Cody Parkey yet. Now, if he goes and has a bad day Sunday, of course, they're going to have to bring in some kickers. And yeah, Matt Nagy will be totally over Cody Parkey.
You know, he went a little Don Cooper. You know, he went, you know, he had one bad day. He had one bad day, guys. I don't think he
didn't have one bad game, though. He's been bad all year.
I'm not disagreeing with you, Kevin. I'm talking about, I watched the press conference. I don't know if you did. That's what he said. He went all Don Cooper on us. He said he had one bad game. I think this is something that Matt Nagy has handled poorly from the start, and he's kind of being exposed, and he's been so good. Listen, I am not going to bury Matt Nagy for this one, okay? But I think this is because Tabor probably told him, you know, what we do is we send the kicker, the long snapper, and the holder down to Soldier one day a week, and he said, nah, not anymore, we're not going to do that. And now that bit them in the backside, kind of, sort of. Only because it became a story. Again, they didn't lose a game yet, keyword, yet, because of the kicker. And the Bears have thrown their arms around this guy. And now he's on my fantasy team. So, I mean, what could go wrong?
You asked me that same question the other day.
No, I wasn't at your meeting.
No, I'm messing with you.
Do you agree with Dan Hampton's assessment that Khalil Mack is the best Bears player in 30 years?
Well, I love Hamp's ability to kind of go for the polarizing opinion and go for the extreme and get attention, because that's the way he is. When we love his opinions, they're strong. But I don't agree with him here. I think that Khalil Mack has the potential to be the best player the Bears have had in 30 years. And I think he said, no offense, Urlacher. I think that the old Brian Urlacher might have taken great offense at that suggestion, but I think the new mellower version of Brian Urlacher, the guy with hair.
The hair can change a man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The hair has changed a man, and I think that it's not the main thing that he focuses on now, if you get my drift. I would think no, but I think that you look at Urlacher, you look at Julius Peppers, you look at Devin Hester. Those are three guys who will... You know, Urlacher is in the Hall of Fame. Julius Peppers is going to be a guy who gets strong consideration for the Hall of Fame. Devin Hester, same deal. So I would think that when you look at that time frame, those guys are probably at the top of the list. Khalil Mack is on his way, but he's still on his way.
Mack is by a mile the best player they've had here in 30 years. There's not a shadow of a doubt about it. He is 5 times better than Brian Urlacher, 10 times better than Devin Hester. The only guy I would say would have a chance in the conversation would be Julius Peppers. Oh. But I don't think – I think that I would take Khalil Mack over Peppers, Khalil Mack greater than Peppers. I think that would be one to look at and consider. I don't know that we necessarily saw Julius Peppers in his prime, which tells you how unbelievably good he was even as a younger player, even when he turned into a smaller version of the giant that was Julius Peppers when he was with the Packers. That's a great – player that is a Hall of Fame player. He will definitely get in. There's not a shadow of a doubt that Khalil Mack is the best player they've had. No offense to Brian Urlacher, but Brian Urlacher has never had a game. Has never. And you talk about the Arizona. Brian Urlacher never played a game. Never played a half like the first half of the first game that Julius Peppers plays. How long is Julius Peppers? How long is Khalil Mack's prime? I think we're seeing it in front of us. I think it's – and I think that's one of the reasons that the Bears are going to be a playoff team is because of Khalil Mack and what he brings and the dimension he adds and the way that he plays and the way everyone goes. Brian, God bless him, fit in with teammates and didn't want to be separate, want to be part of it. Khalil Mack doesn't mind being a star among standing out among – everyone and is going to continue to do it. He's an unbelievable talent, and he is a huge impact, and he is significantly better than Brian. No offense to anyone.
I think he said no offense like 6 different times there just to...
I just want to, because Dan said that, so I'm trying to join in. But it's not even close.
No. This is the first time I think in my entire life I've ever agreed with anything that Dan Hampton has said, and I do agree with him absolutely that Khalil Mack is the best Bears player that I've seen in my lifetime. And just because he's only been on the Bears for, a handful of games here, it doesn't make him, Johnny come lately or anything. This guy was putting up insane numbers, playing like this in Oakland for several years. So obviously Urlacher was here for a longer time. They had more success up to that point. We don't know what Khalil Mack is going to end up doing here during his tenure with the Bears. But I think Urlacher being in the playoffs pretty consistently, getting to a Super Bowl, it kind of raises up his profile more than I think it would have had he not been playing for a team with so many other great defenders in such a really good scheme that they had there with Lovie Smith. So I do think Khalil Mack is just on an entirely different level. If you're watching a football game with somebody who's not really a football fan and they don't really know anything about the game, they'll still notice Khalil Mack.
They'll say
that guy right there, number 52, is the best player on the field. You get somebody that doesn't know a thing about football.
That's the Michael Jordan. The Michael Jordan test. If you brought the man from Mars down and you said, well, these are sports, we like to watch. Here, like, oh, who's that guy?
Why is the ball shaped like that?
Yeah, exactly. You'd have to go through a lot of things with the man from Mars.
But 52 would be.
But if you ever got there and he actually was able to time travel and see Mike in his prime, it'd have been like watching Khalil Mack.
I'm with the Danimal here, I got to say.
I'm with you.
I mean, no offense to Brian Urlacher, though.
No offense.
None.
Khalil Mack is a monster. I love watching this guy. Nobody can stop him unless he's the only time we've seen him down is when he's been a little hurt a few weeks back. But nobody can stop this guy from getting to the quarterback. Just watching him on the pass rush is amazing. I'm not going to put him ahead of Urlacher just yet, just because of... Because
of your personal relationship with him?
That's a shot.
I'm asking Ray.
No, okay. Just because of Urlacher's tenure with the Bears. Of course, this is a different level of player. This is like, comparing LeBron to players of other older eras. It's just a different type of player. It's a different game, a different guy on a different level.
You have to wait a little more time.
Yeah, he probably needs a couple more games. Maybe one more game to be better than Urlacher.
Do I think he will be the greatest Bears player of all time? I do. And the meatball,
30 years, not
the
all
meatball
time.
Inside me dies
that's,
a little
that's
because
all
of
time
Walter
for
Payton,
me and Ray
my
is 30
friend.
Years.
Well, Walter Payton.
I never saw Walter Payton play.
I know, me either.
How about Dick Butkus? Was he not the greatest defensive
player? Walter
on tape, but not live.
He was born in 1986, Dustin.
Did you have you ever watched? I mean, have your eyes
what
ever
do YouTube
seen him run the
highlights
ball?
Count?
But living in the moment is so much different.
Yes, it is.
Were you conceived at halftime during? Oh no, that was someone else.
No.
Wrong
no,
show
no,
again.
No.
I mean, first of all, amen to the real number 99. Okay, I mean, if there ever was
real number 99,
no,
that's awesome.
And we're going to get on to that,
yeah.
Okay? Because you want to talk about what the Bears should do. To the first thing the Bears should do when they're celebrating their 100th year in the NFL, they should retire the number 99. Do you know how many bums have disgraced that number? Okay, since Danimal hung it up in 1990, and we'll start with we'll remove it 2 times ago. I mean, Shay McClellan. Wore 99, and then he wore 50. I mean, he disgraced 2 all-time great Bear numbers. Okay,
can I say something about Dan Hampton's playing career? Dan Hampton, and for those that are too young to have ever watched Dan Hampton, imagine if J.J. Watt never had an injury, or if J.J. Watt played through every season-ending injury to be more accurate. Dan Hampton was a Pro Bowl player at all 4 defensive line positions, inside right, outside right and left, inside right and left, all 4 different positions he made a Pro Bowl at. That's how good Dan Hampton, he was J.J. Watt before J.J. Watt, only, I mean, that kind of country strong, and he got injured too, but he played through every one of those injuries. What did he have, 10 knee surgeries while he played? So don't, if we want to do an appreciation of Dan Hampton, Khalil Mack, Julius Peppers, Brian Urlacher, they'll never be the player that Dan Hampton was. But go ahead, Dustin. I'm sorry.
That's a good question.
Y'all through?
No, I...
No, Dustin. Is Dustin all through?
Oh, Dustin, why didn't you answer it?
I did. I was trying.
What did you say? I know. I got fired up about Dan Hampton. You said they should retire his number, and I was agreeing.
Who's
better? Who's the better player in the last 30 years?
There isn't one. I mean, if we're talking about that ever has donned the Bears uniform or that
no, less
they, how
years.
They played when they were a Bear. I mean, Orlando Pace was one of the all-time greatest left tackles to ever play this game, but he stunk as a Bear, right? I mean, Julius Peppers is going to go down as one of the all-time best, but he's a dog when he was with the Bears. He took a lot of plays off. He could have been a lot better. He's kind of lazy, if you know what I mean. But Danimal, 99 should be retired, and he couldn't be more right about Brian Urlacher. No offense.
That's a good question.
Don't miss your chance to catch the Northwestern Wildcats at Ryan Field this fall. Northwestern hosts Illinois on November 24th for Senior Day. Tickets on sale now at nusports.com.
All right, who will win the game and by what score will the winner end up with the NFC North title?
I'm going back and forth on this one. I think it's possible the Bears win the game and don't win the NFC North title. Does that sound crazy? That would mean they'd have to lose one of those weird road games. They'd have to somehow lose the Packers at home. I don't know. I like the Bears in this game. I like them at about a 17-14 clip. I think they're due to win one of these kind of Tennessee 9-6 games, which makes no sense, but... what is the over-under, 45? So I got to go under on that. I think it's going to be a tight, it's going to be a good defensive game. The thing that scares me a little bit is Cook coming back. He's missed 5 games, and he had the bye week. That's 6 weeks to get back from a hamstring. That sounds about right to me. And he gives them a different dimension. We've seen the Bears shut down running games, but he can also catch the ball out of the backfield. It's not a power running game. He's a big play guy. I think the Bears win this game at like a 17-14 type of game, but I don't think they win the NFC North. I guess I got to see them win this game before I'm really willing to give them the NFC North.
Yeah, I'm not willing to say the winner of this game is going to win the NFC North yet. I think there's too much football left to play to determine that in mid-November, and it's too tight. Yeah. But as I was thinking about this yesterday, I had to file my prediction by 5 for the Tribune, and I think I'm with you. You know, you said something earlier in the week that sort of resonated as I thought about this game. You know, we could talk about Cody Parkey's foot and Mitch Trubisky's arm and Khalil Mack's strength. It's going to come down to Matt Nagy's brain. That's going to be the most important aspect of this game. And I think that the way the Bears' offensive scheme will outmaneuver the Vikings defense. It'll neutralize the pass rush. They'll make the plays they need to make. And I think the Bears defense will be good enough to keep everything in front of them to prevent the big play. So I'm saying Bears 23-20.
It always makes me nervous when we're all thinking along the same lines of things. And even the score that I predicted was very similar to what you guys are thinking. I had the Bears winning 20-17. You know, it's a home game for the Bears. They've played a lot better at Soldier Field than they have on the road. I think that might be the determining factor in this game. You know, the Cook thing is big because he is a guy that can break off a big play at any time. That gave me a little bit of pause, and the whole kicker thing, you know, it's in my head even. So I feel bad for Cody Parkey, because if it's in my head as just some idiot that talks into a microphone, I'm sure it's probably swirling around that head of his as well. I just hope it doesn't come down to a game-winning kick situation. I mean, hell, even an extra winning or an extra point for the game at this point would make me a little nervous. But I'm going to stick with my gut here. I'm going to say the Bears win 2017, and I think that they will end up winning this division. I think that tie that Minnesota had earlier in the season is going to come back and bite them in the rear later on. I think the Bears probably finish 11-5, and you might see Minnesota just one game behind them.
Boy, we're in trouble. Because
See, this is what I mean.
Yep.
That's what I mean.
My score is 24-20 Bears. And I think, you know, obviously this is going to be a big defensive battle. The Vikings are 28th in the league rushing. They're just averaging about 91.7 yards a game. And the Bears rush defense is great. So I think if the Bears can hold them to under 100 yards, they're going to win. Of course, the big X factor here, as you guys already brought up, Dalvin Cook is healthy. So if they can limit him, I think that's a win. And also, this is going to be a huge test for Mitchell and the offensive line. This Vikings defense has 31 sacks. They're atop the league with sacks, and they're great on third down defense. So if they can, if Mitchell has another good game, if he can level up again, I think the Bears got the win.
It's a big game, I think, for Kirk Cousins as well. I mean, he's put up the numbers. But, you know, going into Soldier Field, primetime game against a great defense in a huge, not must win, but a statement game situation, can Kirk Cousins do that as well? I mean, that's something else you got to take into account.
It's interesting that these guys, Cousins and Trubisky, are on two ends of the spectrum in their careers, but here they are kind of in the same boat.
This is going to be an offensive line game, and what I mean by that, if the Bears can, you know, if the Bears can protect Trubisky, and if the Bears defensive line can get to the Vikings quarterback, the Vikings offensive line is not their big thing.
That's garbage.
That is not their top unit. Okay,
hot
probably
garbage.
Their worst unit, right, Molly? It's like their worst.
No
unit.
Doubt.
So if that's the Bears' best unit versus the worst unit, I see this game 24-20 Bears. Cody Parkey, the game-winning 44-yard field goal on the turf at Soldier Field.
Nice.
What kind of question is
that? The Bears by four, but Cody Parkey hits the game-winning field goal?
That's right.
Okay.
What kind of question is that?
So are the Packers merely spoilers now after losing to the Seahawks? And did Mike McCarthy get himself fired, deciding to punt on 4th-and-2 with 4 minutes left?
That was a surprising decision. You have the ball, you have the quarterback, you have everything that would make you feel confident about if you go for it and you think you're going to make it. It's 4th-and-2, and it's 4 minutes to go. And even if you don't make it, you have a timeout left and maybe you get the ball back. I was surprised by that. I think that kind of sealed Mike McCarthy's fate a little bit. It's was a surprising move, and the Packers are going to be in the role of spoilers. They're in a very unusual position for them in mid-November. They also have a schedule that's more agreeable than maybe had they won that game, put it this way, had they won that game like they should have won that game, they would have been in position to make a run. So now that they're really not in that position, and they seem to find ways to lose games, which is a very uncharacteristic thing for Aaron Rodgers' team. Now I do think they're in the role of spoilers, and unfortunately for the Bears, they play them again. So they're one of the teams that they could spoil.
Yeah, they are definitely in the role of spoiler. I like that way of putting it. Did Mike McCarthy get himself fired by deciding to punt at 4th-and-2? Not a chance. He got himself fired maybe 2-3 years ago, maybe 5 years ago. Mike McCarthy, it's been a long time, and there is a use-by date with coaches. I believe Bill Walsh said 10 years, right? So he's on 13. And that's really difficult for any coach to be able to continue.
The milk is
for
gone
any
bad.
Team. It's just – it's cheese. It is just unfortunate, but it is time. I think it was time, again, a year or two ago, and they have a hard time up there getting the owner to do anything. But that was a joke. The fact of the matter is that Mike's probably gone. He's a really good football coach and has had a really good career, but I don't think it happened with one play or in one game. I think it's a collective thing, and it's also a time thing.
Yeah, Mike McCarthy has been dead man walking, so to speak, for quite a few years now. And if you speak to some Packer fans, and they'll let you know that they're not huge fans of Mike McCarthy. You know, the Super Bowl win was a long time ago, and that will buy you goodwill, and that will buy you a little leeway for a few years after the fact. And I think even that organization has gone above and beyond what they needed to show in terms of loyalty to Mike McCarthy for that Super Bowl win. But I don't think there's any chance that the Packers get back in this divisional race. You know, they're similar to me right now to where Detroit is with their season, but I don't think that Aaron Rodgers will let his team quit the way that Matt Stafford is probably going to let his team quit. That's the big difference
and
there.
The other one is I doubt Mike McCarthy's going to show up to practice in the snow in shorts.
I think you're definitely right about that one as well. Mike McCarthy is out, though, at the end of the season, finally. And I feel bad saying it because it's going to make Packers fans happy, and I don't want that, but I think they will fire him here at the end of the year.
Yes, Packers are merely spoilers at this point in the season. Is punting on fourth and second with 4 minutes left going to be the reason he gets fired? No. If the Packers, and in all likelihood, they definitely are out of the playoff picture, if they don't make the playoffs again, then yes, if they don't make the playoffs, they will fire Mike McCarthy. He will lose his job, but unless they can somehow turn this season around, maybe make some kind of wild card, get in the picture there, but I don't think that's going to happen. So I think the McCarthy era is done in Green Bay.
As Molly likes to point out, math is not necessarily my strong suit, but I could explain the reason why I said what I said. But we're short on time.
If you
right
kick
now.
It past 60 yards, it counts for 4 points.
Sure.
No, explain it.
No, we don't have time.
We'd love to know.
I don't want to bore anybody. I never will count out the Packers. I don't care even when they're mathematically out of it, even by public school math ways. I never count out Aaron Rodgers. He can always do damage. He can play the spoiler. He can mess up a season. And it stinks that the Bears still have to play them time if the game matters at that point.
It's a good question.
With Javi Baez finishing second in the National League MVP voting, do you expect him to duplicate that kind of year next season? Is he the most valuable Cub? Did his versatility allowing him to play several positions make him an MVP candidate, or did he become an MVP candidate due to his versatility?
I think that he'll have a very hard time duplicating the kind of year he had next season. He was the most valuable Cub this year. His versatility did help him become an MVP candidate, but I don't know that it's just because of his versatility. I think that, you know, he makes these highlight reel plays that are unbelievable. His base running, his, you know, again, I've never heard of tag metrics before, and we tried to create them over his ability to tag guys out. He does things like that that are just eye-popping. But the difference this year is that he was hitting the ball as well as he was. And this is a, you know, free swinging man of the traveling people. He's going to swing at pitches, man. He is going to swing at a huge percentage of what's thrown to him. So I don't know that he's going to get better offensively. He could. I mean, I'm not saying he can't, but I think that there was a high hit rate that you don't often get when you're swinging as many pitches as he faces and swings at. So I think that will come back and bite him a little bit. I don't believe it's a missed opportunity for him. It would have been great if he got an MVP, but I think Christian Yelich overtook him in the final month of the season, which is just a pity because he was doing it all and he was the right guy, and then Yelich just put it out of reach with an unbelievable finish.
I don't know if he's going to have the same type of success next year, I think, for the reasons you sort of articulated. And I would say that is he the most valuable Cub? When I was thinking about this question, I probably have more confidence that Chris Bryant is going to come back and be the player he was before the injury than I do that Javi Baez is going to duplicate his success.
Totally agree. You know? I meant, is he the most valuable Cub this year?
I think this year, because of the numbers.
But I agree with you. Bryant will be the most likely of the two to win another MVP. And then Addison Russell.
I would agree with
that. That was just a joke.
I would agree with that.
He's still a future MVP.
And I think what's interesting about what's going on with the Cubs here is that you hear this sort of undercurrent of desire for Joe to have this everyday lineup and more certainty to the everyday approach, and everybody has to have a position that they bat in the order, and there's more regularity, where I think that Javi Baez sort of dispels that sort of notion, because I do think he became more valuable as the more versatile he was in the lineup, moving around position to position. That's who Javi was. You could bat him anywhere, you could play him anywhere, and he was still going to produce. And he seemed to thrive off of that. So I don't know that you want to put Javi in a box, and certainly don't put him in the corner.
Some great references on the program already today.
Did you see that movie, Kevin? Have you seen that movie?
Have I seen Dirty Dancing?
Time and time and time again.
Come on. Let's go. It's a classic.
Thank you.
I'm a big Swayze guy. Big Swayze guy. Roadhouse? Let's go. Point Break? I think Javi Baez's versatility is outstanding. You put him anywhere, he's going to be a really good player for you defensively. But I just think that's more of a thing that Joe Maddon does with all of his players on his team. You have to kind of be versatile if you want to play consistently on a Joe Maddon team. So I think Baez, whether he's playing a game at short, third, second, left field, I don't think it matters. You know, be the same if he played 160 games at second base. He still had a fantastic season. That being said, I don't think there's any chance in hell he ever has as good of a season as he had this past year for many number of factors that we won't get into now because we are short on time. But, you know, I think with all of this smoke around the Cubs right now, or lack thereof, you know, that they're not going to make a big move and they're going to stand pat and they can't do anything and they're a little hamstrung right now, could it be possible that Javi Baez would be appealing to another team? You know, the Cubs might need another pitcher.
Oh, you are just stirring it up now.
No, well, you know,
just stirring it up.
It's selling
you
high.
You would trade him?
Sell high, buy low, my friend. There's no chance he has as good of a season ever again that he just had. You get it while the getting's good. You move this guy, move on. You get a good pitcher in here.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult for Javi to repeat the kind of season he had. Hopefully in the offseason here, I would like to see him become less of a free swinging guy, but I know that is in his DNA. I think he has much of a more realistic chance of making that next step. And we've seen him. Nobody saw this season coming from Javi Baez, especially offensively, and hopefully he could take another stride forward. But I find it hard to believe that he could repeat the same type of season. He was definitely the most valuable Cub of 2018. Len Casper made the argument that his versatility would work against him in the MVP candidacy. However, it's definitely works well for the Cubs, and it's a big plus. That's why, Kevin, I don't see the Cubs ever moving this guy.
Should.
I mean, what an asinine. I mean, I'm the king of asinine comments. That's a topper right there.
What, selling a guy at his highest ever value?
Now name the pitcher.
I don't know. It could be anybody.
See,
Madison Bumgarner for all I know.
Here's a lesson, okay? Here's three words to never say in sports talk radio. I don't know. Okay, you're supposed to know. That's why you're here. That's why you have the opportunity.
How about predicting a game-winning field goal when the other team wins by 4 points? Can you still explain that one? Because my mind is still a little bit...
We're at 56-43 right now. I know you can't tell time either, but we're at 56-47 now. Okay, so we don't have time for that.
I didn't know that rule change was approved.
Okay, that will be the capper on the win. That will put them
game
ahead.
Ceiling.
They'll be up four, and they won't be able to kick
that
the field goal.
That would be the game ceiling.
It.
Yeah, okay. That's not the game winning.
Okay, thank you.
Game
thank
ceiling.
You. Okay, let's not start this because it could get ugly pretty quickly. And again, now it's 5:57 and 11 seconds. Carlos Santos. Okay, we can start there. Carlos Santos.
Cairo. All right, that's the five.
I don't even remember the question.
You were defending Javi.
I think he could win MVP again because he's going to actually be put in a position next year. I fully expect him to start every single game at shortstop next year. That he's not gonna play third base unless something crazy happens with Bryant. He's going to be your everyday shortstop, and that might refocus him.
I don't know.
I think that helps him being in one spot all the time, because then he would actually be the best at his position and actually be in the running for a gold glove, since baseball is so stupid not to recognize what a good defender looks like.
That is the 5 at 5, 312-644-6767.
Carlos
is the
Santos
telephone number. It's Mully and Haw, The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.